You are Locked On Bills, your daily Buffalo Bills podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What's up, Bills Mafia? It's Joe Marino from the Draft Network, and I'm your host of Locked On Bills. Today's episode is brought to you by Pepsi. This football season will be different, and Pepsi is here to get you ready for game day no matter how you watch football this season. Pepsi is a refreshment you need to power through game day and become a member of the League of Football Watchers. These passionate fans are the real generational talent that Pepsi fuels, because Pepsi isn't made for those who play the game, it's made for those who watch it. Pepsi, made for watching football. Happy Friday to you. It's the last time we're going to talk before the Buffalo Bills take on the LA Rams in week three. 11-2-0 teams in the NFL. The only two that are playing each other this week is the Bills and Rams. Like we do every Friday, I have three segments for you. First off, we'll be leftover thoughts. Then we're going to talk to Kyle Trimble of Banged Up Bills for a rundown on so many injuries. There's a lot of guys that are banged up right now, and he'll give us the latest on that. And then we'll close out the podcast in the week with my predictions on the game. Let's start with these leftover thoughts. First thing I want to get to is Josh Allen under pressure. Anyone who's listened to this podcast this year, anyone who listened to it last year, knows that part of my preview for every single game is I talk about the opposing quarterback that the Bills face, and I give you their splits, their production when they're pressured versus when they're not pressured. And every single time, it's this stark difference about how much worse, right? How much less effective they are when they're pressured. How about Josh Allen this year? This guy's been unbelievable under pressure. We've talked about the deep ball. We've talked about his ability to distribute and become more efficient with the football and complete a much higher percentage of his passes. I mean, he's over 70% this year, and he's hitting deep balls, right? That's great growth. We love that. The piece of the growth that we need to start talking a little bit more about is how well he's performed under pressure. And I know that the Jets and Dolphins don't have great pass rushes, but they've still been able to pressure Josh Allen. He's been pressured on 28 dropbacks out of 90 so far this year. How has he fared? Well, he's 15 of 22. That's a completion percentage of 68.2. 300 yards, 13.6 yards per attempt, 4 touchdowns, and a passer rating of 150.6. That's unbelievable. He's actually got a higher passer rating when he's pressured compared to when he's kept clean. His passer rating when he's kept clean is 103. When he's under pressure, it's 150.6. His yards per attempt with no pressure, 7.3. With pressure, 13.6. And no pressure, he's completing 71.2% of his passes. Under pressure, 68.2. Remarkable. Now, I am nervous, like I am many Josh Allen stats right now, that there's some regression to the mean, right? So that I know that that's not sustainable. No quarterback in the history of the NFL has ever had a passer rating under pressure for an entire season at 150.6. But we can certainly celebrate that piece of his growth that he's demonstrated so far early this year. So I wanted to make sure I got that out today on the podcast, because I always spend so much time talking about pressuring quarterbacks and how much it affects them. Well, Josh Allen has been a better quarterback this year when he's pressured, and that is tremendous growth from what we've seen in years past. Second thing I want to talk about is tight ends. Doesn't look good for Dawson Knox this week. Has a concussion, did not participate in practice Wednesday or Thursday. But I still want to talk about how he's being used this year compared to his rookie season, and also incorporate Tyler Kroft in this discussion, and then get to a bigger idea here, in that there is a stark difference in how Brian Daboll is using tight ends this year compared to 2019. So in 2020 so far, Dawson Knox has played 79 snaps. Tyler Kroft has played 35. And of course, we know Lee Smith has been inactive. He hasn't even dressed. So Dawson Knox in 79 snaps, 28 times he's lined up in line, 7 times in the slot, 4 times out wide, and 39 times in the backfield. That's the big number I want you to focus on. 39 of Dawson Knox's 79 snaps this year have been lined up in the backfield. Tyler Kroft, 35 snaps this year, 20 in line, 3 in the slot, 2 out wide, 10 in the backfield. So 10 of Tyler Kroft's 35 total snaps have been in the backfield. Let's look at 2019. Dawson Knox played 703 snaps. 484 were in line, 148 in the slot, 69 out wide, and 2 in the backfield. 2 out of 703 in the backfield. This year, 39 out of 79. Massive uptick. Tyler Kroft, 264 snaps played in 2019, 205 in line, 40 in the slot, 18 out wide, and 1 in the backfield. Dawson Knox has been lined up as an inline tight end this year so far, 35% of the time, and he's been in the backfield 49% of the time. Last year, he was in line 69% of the time. There's been a fundamental difference here in how Brian Daboll is using his tight ends, and obviously specifically want to focus in on Dawson Knox. Last year, or so far this year, out of all the Bills plays that they've run, only 32% of the times has it featured either Tyler Kroft or Dawson Knox as an inline tight end. Brian Daboll is using Knox a lot like a fullback, to be completely honest with you. Really a true H-back, because he does line up in so many different spots. He's an F tight end. He's everywhere in the formation, but primarily in the backfield. He's a true H-back. The Bills don't really use inline tight end so far through two games this year. I mean, they're lining up in gun, and Knox is serving as a fullback. It's unbelievable. Using him as a lead blocker, using him to leak out into space. It's really interesting stuff. And it's a fundamental change. So what I'm getting to, the bigger point here, is obviously I want to point out this very different usage of tight ends, specifically Dawson Knox, how he's really an H-back now. And what this comes back to is scheme evolution. I'm sure you guys have kept up with some of this on social media, but Brian Daboll is blowing everyone's minds right now with his personnel groupings, with going 10 personnel, with how he's using fullbacks, obviously taking a lot of credit for Josh Allen's growth and how he's blended together Stephon Diggs and used all of the pieces that he's been given. But this is what happens when you have time on task. This is what happens when you have two full seasons and you're entering a third season with the same play caller and quarterback, and how important that is. And I don't want to get way ahead of ourselves, but if Brian Daboll keeps up this pace to some level, he's going to be head coach next year. And the Bills are going to be looking for a new offensive coordinator. I know Sean McDermott knows that, right? I know he knows that. He's thinking about it. He's very prepared. But there's no replacement of having that time on task. Brian Daboll cannot be replicated. You could try to promote Rob Boris or Ken Dorsey to be the next offensive coordinator, but still not Brian Daboll. And so I know Brian Daboll hasn't always been loved by everyone in Bills Mafia. I think a lot of us saw the bigger picture here and saw what this scheme could get to. And I think everyone's really happy right now. Now, I'm sure he'll call a play that somebody doesn't like and he'll get blasted. But for the most part, I think Brian Daboll's approval rating is very high right now. But I'm going to enjoy Brian Daboll this year. But folks, I'm awfully nervous that he won't be back next season. And hopefully Sean McDermott has a really good plan so that this scheme and this offense doesn't take a step back. Last thing I want to talk about in my leftover thoughts is Sean McVay versus Sean McDermott. This is a really exciting matchup to me. We've broken it down a ton over the last few days on the podcast, but you got Sean McVay, a young, innovative offensive mind. Got Sean McDermott, a young, innovative defensive mind. And that's going to be fun. If you're a football nerd, you got to love this. Got to love two really smart football people going at it. So the question that I had was, have they ever faced off before? Well, we know that they both got hired as head coaches in 2017, and the Bills and Rams have not played each other. But when McVay was the offensive coordinator in Washington and McDermott was the defensive coordinator in Carolina, they played twice, once in 2015, once in 2016. Well, what happened in those games? Panthers won both of those games. 2016, they won 26-15. In 2015, the Panthers won 44-16. How did McVay's offense do against McDermott's defense? Not great. Let's dig into the specifics. In 2015, their first ever meeting, like I said, the Panthers won 44-16, so was limited to just 16 points. Washington had 9 first downs for the game, 186 total yards, 14 rushing yards, 172 passing yards, and the Panthers' defense, McDermott's defense, forced 5 turnovers that day. Kirk Cousins, the quarterback of Washington at the time. In 2016, 1 year later, they played, and the Panthers won 26-15, so McDermott's defense held McVay to 15 points, 18 first downs, 335 total yards. 306 of those were passing yards, only 29 rushing yards on 13 total rushes, and they forced 3 turnovers. So, I mean, in 2 games previously, McVay's offense has committed 8 turnovers and scored 31 total points in 2 games and is averaging 246 yards per game. So far, so good when it comes to McDermott matching up with McVay's offense. Now, obviously, those numbers are about different teams with different players, and it was 4 years ago, so you can only put so much into it. But I thought it was interesting to kind of bring this up. It's their first meeting in a while. They're both lead head coaches now. They both have their, you know, their situations in a good spot with a lot of hope and optimism surrounding both teams. But so far, McDermott's definitely had the upper hand. Help support your local businesses, whether they're your corner stores, coffee spots, or favorite shops. Local businesses have always been on your team, supporting you and your community. They remember your order and call you by name, always giving back, making a difference, and going that extra mile. But right now, more than ever, local businesses need our support. So let's be there for them. The next time you go shopping, help your team score and choose to shop at local businesses. And while you're there, look for the contactless symbol and tap to pay with a contactless Visa to help support your community, because where and how you shop matters. Visa, everywhere you want to be, official partner of the NFL. I'm joined now by Kyle Trimble, Doctor of Physical Therapy. Banged Up Bills is the website. You can follow him on Twitter at Banged Up Bills. And let me tell you right now, make sure you're following Kyle at Banged Up Bills. This man is literally combing through every piece of video, every picture he could get on these Bills players so that he can have information to share with us on this podcast, as well as the written work that he does throughout the week. Kyle, welcome. Let's start with these linebackers, Tremaine Edmonds, Matt Milano. We saw how the defense looked without both of those guys, but I think there's some encouraging signs here that they could be available this week. Both were limited on Wednesday and Thursday.
Milano and Edmonds, that's a great sign that they are both out there. We saw that Edmonds was limited last week. He ended up not playing after being do not participate on Friday. We saw that Milano was out there after not being out there last week. He did not have a red non-contract jersey, which is an excellent sign. He's still limited the past 2 days. I want to see a full practice from Milano before I can say, hey, he's going to be playing. But the fact that he's out there and participating is usually a good sign, and what the team typically likes to do with the hamstrings. They rest them for a while, and then they slowly get them back out there and hopefully get them full. As for Edmonds, as I see this thing linger on, I start thinking something else with that. We were thinking contusion the first time, maybe it was just a pain thing. But as he's still in the red non-contact jersey, I start thinking, did he do something to his rotator cuff where he landed on it, had more bruising? I thought AC joint sprain, but I wasn't certain of that because it just something doesn't fit the profile with how he fell and the management afterward. There's a possibility he could have a sternoclavicular joint sprain, which is the other side of the clavicle, which goes up against the breastbone. That would fit more with how he fell. I've looked at the video a number of times. He falls more on his back, but is still hitting at the shoulder. That fits with what that injury is. They can come back in about 2 weeks, but there's still a lot of inflammation, swelling, and just would also support why he's having difficulty lifting his arm last week when he was talking with Leslie Frazier. So it's a hit or miss whether he plays at all this week. We saw I was wrong again, but as we get more information, as it's more limited, we start seeing the picture become more clear.
Fingers crossed. Need those guys against this Rams offense. Let's turn our attention to a couple of offensive skill players for the Bills. Cole Beasley, wide receiver, did not participate on Wednesday, but was a full participant on Thursday with a hip/thumb injury. And then Zach Moss, the rookie running back, has not practiced yet this week with a toe injury.
So Beasley, he was a surprise to come up with an injury report. The hip, I can't say exactly where it happened, but if you remember watching the game, he came down hard a few times out of bounds. I mean, he, I think he had 5 catches. I looked at just about every one of them, and he was coming down hard. He was playing a very physical game. So that could have been also where he injured his thumb. The hip, I don't think, is really too concerning. He was running his routes fine during today's practice from what we saw. That thumb is more concerning. Matt Perino of NewYorkUpstate.com had got video out of him catching the ball, and you could tell he was in visible pain. He was shaking his hand. He's kicking the football, just frustrated with how his hand was moving and just not participating or working well for him. So it's possible he could have just had a sprained thumb, kind of like a gamekeeper's skier's thumb. Hopefully it's pretty mild. They did have it taped up pretty well to give it some stability. This might be more pain management thing. He did practice in full today, which leads me to believe he's going to play on Sunday. But you got to wonder how many targets he's going to get or how long he's going to last because of the ball hitting the hand, and we know how hard Josh Allen throws. So he's probably going to play. He's going to suck it up, but you can tell he's not going to be happy with his hand hurting like that all the time. As for John Brown, you said, correct?
Zach Moss.
No, Zach Moss. Okay, I'm going way ahead here.
Get to John Brown. So, calm down, knockout.
Zach Moss. So this is an interesting one. So I had a lot of people tweeting at me, hey, he's out of the game. Oh, he came back in. And I went back and looked at the film. There wasn't anything crazy when he went down because he got tackled. He landed on his butt. Pretty routine play after a catch and run. So I was like, there's not really anything there. But then he shows up with a toe. The only toe injury that you can really have in NFL, from what I've seen, that can affect you from the performance side is more of a turf toe. I know that scares a lot of people. Phillip Lindsay of Denver is out right now 2 to 4 weeks with that. Going off of that, when Moss did do the catch and run, he caught the ball, pivoted hard, fell down, and then ran a few extra yards, and then before getting tackled. He could have hyperextended his toe, which is what the turf toe is, and usually see this more on artificial turf. However, Hard Rock Stadium does have natural turf from what I saw. So the fact that Moss isn't playing or practicing isn't surprising if that is indeed the case. These can be taken about 2 weeks, but they can also linger if they're not managed properly. Some of the things they could do is they could tape up the toe to give it support. They could put a stiff sole into the shoe to prevent him from pushing off the toe as much, and more of a stiffer shoe in general so that he's not re-aggravating the injury. But it's something that he definitely wants to get right because he's going to lose that explosiveness coming off the line when he gets handed the ball if he doesn't take care of it now. So two do not participate is not encouraging, but it's not out of the realm of possibility. He could play, but I'm leaning toward he might miss Leon Yeldon to play in his place on Sunday.
Yeah, sounds like we could have TJ Yeldon's 2020 debut. Let's look at a couple of defensive players here. Ed Oliver and Taron Johnson, the slot corner. Taron Johnson with a groin, Ed Oliver with a knee. What can you tell us about these players?
So Oliver, I saw on Sunday, he did hit his leg with the leg whip. He was trying to block with it. I was told that that would have been a penalty and they didn't catch it, but he paid the price for it. He came off limping pretty good. When I looked back to the film later, he did hit the knee first and then he had a secondary hit of the shin kind of bouncing back and hitting him again. So he got the double whammy. So they list him with a knee injury and you see he directly hit on it. Joe Biscaglia of The Athletic did note that he was wearing a brace today. I reached out to him and asked him, was it more of a compression sleeve or more of a hinge? And he said he could see skin indicating hinge, which would support more of a knee hyperextension. Considering that his leg was up in the air, it's going to be a pretty minor knee hyperextension. Your knee does go back into hyperextension naturally. But when you get that kind of force through there, it's going to stretch things out, and it's not going to be fun to deal with. So it's probably more of a pain thing at this point. The brace is there to help just protect, and so he's not re-aggravating that hyperextension since there is some laxity in the joint. But he said he's going to be playing on Sunday. I see no reason why he couldn't play on Sunday, and you know, he should be good to go. As for Johnson, I cringe every time I see him on the injury report. Yeah. Just because he's on there so often. He's a shoulder, he's on there with the hamstring, now he's on there with the groin. We see the hamstring and groin injuries go back and forth, and they can be problematic. And we know how hard Johnson plays. He just refuses to play a more conservative style to keep his body available. So I didn't see a thing on film. He played till the very end. This could have been something that he played through, didn't really have a problem with it, and then kind of, as he got farther and farther away from the game, realizing, man, this is more sore. I did something. I'm hoping it's just a strain right now. You always worry about core muscle injuries, but until we see something linger or he's missing more practices and games, it's too early to tell with that stuff. And that's typically how we manage that from a physical therapy perspective. So he's hit or miss with whether to play Sunday, his history. I'd willing to believe that he might not play Sunday. I could be wrong. I have been before.
All right, Kyle, let's finish up with a little bit of a rapid fire here. We'll go through three players one at a time and just tell us what you know. We'll start with the one you tried to get to earlier, John Brown, wide receiver. He wasn't on the report on Wednesday and then limited with a foot on Thursday.
All right. So as I'm seeing this more and more, this might be premature, but I have a feeling this could be something more, could be a chronic thing at this point. We had that ramp up where you go from running around to some pad practices, now full-blown game. You're playing, you know, 60, 70, 80 plays a game, and you're really going too hard, too fast with things. He could have like a plantar fasciitis in his foot. That's very possible considering that sudden ramp up, and even the most well-conditioned athletes can still develop this kind of stuff there. They can do changing out the insoles. They can do pain management stuff. It's not something that's going to really affect him from a performance standpoint, but it's going to be more pain, and he's not going to be very happy. But once he gets up and moving, he should be good to go. That's just a theory, though. But considering we might see him popping up again more and more with the foot on and off, on and off. As for your next question would be
Trey White, shoulder, limited Wednesday, yes. Full on Thursday. Said he was going to play, but obviously he was in a non-contact jersey this week.
He is a mystery. I didn't see a thing on film. I don't know what's going on. He did the same thing last year with the neck injury. He was in red knot in contact for about 2 weeks early in the season. Didn't know what was going on, and then he was fine the rest of the year. So I sometimes see a lot of neck injuries that can present as shoulders and vice versa. I don't know if the two are connected. That's just a theory, and sometimes you look for patterns with things. They could be totally separate injuries. He's a very physical player as well, and he did make some tackles. So if he says he's good to go, I want to believe him until he says otherwise.
Last one, Dawson Knox, tight end, concussion. Has not practiced yet this week.
I see no way how he plays on Sunday. Do not participate. He was on the bike today. I didn't see whether he was doing individual drills on the sideline. So I would say right now he's at least at stage 2, possibly stage 3. He still has to get through individual drills with some pads on and, you know, make sure he's not having symptom reproduction. And then he has to go through football practices with contact to make sure he's not having that reproduction of symptoms after that. Then he has to go to the independent neurological consultation and get cleared. So to do that all in 2 days, I don't think is realistic. We have seen guys come back in a week, but with the tight end depth, I'd love to see him come back quickly, but I don't know how that's going to happen. So I would rule him out, and I want to say I'm slightly more confident than some of my other predictions.
Well, the Bills are banged up right now. This is a lot different than last year when we had these conversations on Friday. So we appreciate your expertise here each and every week to get us ready and understand what's going on with these players. So Dr. Kyle Trimble, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you, Joe.
This season, get football on your time with NFL Game Pass. You can catch every snap from every game with full game replays and see all the plays in just 45 minutes with condensed games. You can relive all the gutsy calls, crazy catches, wild comebacks, and breakout stars from every game every week. It's all the action, all the football you can handle, all in one place. And NFL Game Pass is the only place where you can replay every game all season long. You'll also learn from the league's best players with over 40 NFL Game Pass film session episodes. Go inside the game from a player's perspective as they break down the game's concepts and techniques. Learn from the best like Deshaun Watson, Tre'Davious White, Davante Adams, and many more. NFL Game Pass also provides you with access to the entire NFL Films archive. Go to NFL.com/Game Pass to start your free trial today. NFL Game Pass, where football never stops. All right, folks, it's time to release my predictions for Sunday's game. I've got five of them for you this week, one of which is my prediction for the game. Who wins, the Bills or the Rams? All right, let's start with number one. I think that you're going to get a rushing touchdown this week from a Buffalo Bills player that is not named Josh Allen. It'll be the first touchdown the Bills score this year that doesn't involve Josh Allen running it in or him throwing it to somebody. Now, I don't know if Zach Moss is going to be able to go. I'd actually guess he won't play on Sunday, but Devin Singletary, whether that's Isaiah McKenzie on one of his jet sweeps, maybe that's TJ Yeldon, maybe Reggie Gilliam gets a goal line carry. I am going to predict somebody not named Josh Allen for the Buffalo Bills scores a rushing touchdown. Number two, I think you'll see 27 or more completions from Josh Allen on Sunday. And I know that you guys are probably thinking, well, is that a lot? Well, he had a career high 33 against the Jets in week one. And the highest that he had in any game last year, I think, was 24. So it's a high number. And I think this is one of those game plans where the Bills' offense will need to be content taking a profit. They're going to run a ton of zone coverage. They're going to keep everything in front of them. They're going to tackle. And so I'm sure Brian Daboll will have some route combinations ready to soften up some zones and give Josh some chances to unlaunch the football down the field. But for the most part, I think this is one of those games where Josh really has to kind of take what the defense is giving him and find those completions. And so I think I'm not going to predict 400 yards from Josh, but I think 27 completions and a high efficiency distributing the football is what we'll see from Josh against this Rams defense. Number three, I have Quentin Jefferson logging his first sack as a Bill. He's been close this year. He's been generating some pressure, but he's not gotten home yet. I think that the Rams offensive line is susceptible in the middle, and I think that Ed Oliver and Quentin Jefferson are going to feast on these interior offensive linemen that the Rams trot out there. Another reason why I think Quentin Jefferson is going to get a sack this week is because he does have familiarity against this team. Obviously, he came from Seattle. Seattle's in the same division as the Rams. He's played against this team twice a year for the last several seasons. So he should have some familiarity with these players. I think he's going to get by one of them and bring down Jared Goff on a passing attempt to log his first sack as a Bill. Number four, whoever has more pressure on the quarterback will win this game. I just told you in segment one all about how great Josh Allen has been under pressure. And I think that's great growth, and I think he'll continue to be much better under pressure than he's been in the past. However, I don't know that it's sustainable. Now, here's the good news. The Rams aren't really getting after the passer so well this year. Of course, they have Aaron Donald, but there's not anyone else on that front seven that has been getting consistent pressure on the quarterback. And so if you could take away Aaron Donald, then there's not a whole lot of other guys that are really going to put fear in you to have to block, to be completely honest with you. Now, Aaron Donald's a handful, and he'll get his pressure. He'll probably get a sack. He might get multiple sacks. But collectively, I don't think the Rams' pass rushing options are that great. So I think the Bills are deep when it comes to their defensive line. I think that the Rams have some holes in the middle of their offensive line. And we know that Jared Goff is not very good under pressure. I think that'll be a point of emphasis for this defense. And I think that it'll come down to whatever team has more pressure on the quarterback wins. So how do we quantify that? Well, the good news is we can look and see the next day how many pressures each team logged, how many dropbacks, and you can get a pressure percentage. I think the team with the better pressure percentage wins the football game. So that's my prediction there. Now, one thing that I am nervous about, before I give you my prediction for whether or not the Bills win or lose, I want those linebackers to play, Edmonds and Milano. I think you're going to need them. It's a timing-based offense, a lot of throws over the middle of the field. They want to get Tyler Higbee involved, their tight end. And those guys are critical for matching up with tight ends and spacing in the middle of the field when it comes to zone coverage drops. Not only is there a chance that Milano and Edmonds don't play, but Taron Johnson may not play. Now you're talking about your slot corner. And the Rams are going to play Kupp. They're going to play Robert Woods. You're going to see Van Jefferson. You're going to see Josh Reynolds. They're going to play three receivers. It's going to create some oddities for the Bills. I mean, there's a chance that when the Bills are in base nickel defense, you're talking about Klein and Dotson in the middle with Marlowe or Neal in the slot, maybe Cam Lewis in the slot. That makes me a little bit nervous. That's why that pressure's got to get there if there ever was a week for the Bills to get after these quarterbacks. Pressure's got to get there. That leads me to my prediction. Do the Bills win this football game or not? Do they get to 3-0 or do they fall to 2-1? Give me a Bills dub this week. Got a lot of respect for the Rams. A lot of respect for what they do offensively. A lot of respect for Sean McVay. I just feel like there are holes in that defense. And I think they have four quality starters, two elite starters in Ramsey and Donald, and two quality starters in John Johnson and Michael Brockers. But the rest is just pieced together. And it's a new defensive coordinator, Brandon Staley. And I know he's had some success here in his first couple games. But this is a Buffalo Bills team that is bringing everyone back and is playing well. And so are the Rams. But I just feel like this offense is going to be able to take advantage of some of these questionable players that are going to be on the field for the Rams on Sunday. As for as much respect as I have for the Rams offense, that interior offensive line is a major question mark. And I feel like the Bills' depth at defensive line is perfectly designed for games like this. I don't think the Bills are going to rout the Rams, but I think when the clock hits all zeros, they'll have more points. Looking forward to recapping this game on Monday. Don't miss it. Make sure that you are subscribed, rate, review, and share the podcast. As always, enjoy football this weekend. Go Bills. Looking forward to Victory Monday, and I'll catch up with you then.